The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond. The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Less screen time, more play time. Pause the internet with our new Sky Broadband Buddy app.
Our guest this morning was born in Ireland. She left at the age of five and has had an intriguing life for the 24 years since she's been there. Her name is Alice Little and she's on the phone now. Good morning, Alice. Lovely to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to chat with you as well, and good morning.
Well, let us start at the beginning, shall we? And all roads, of course, leading to Dublin, Ireland, and where it all began for you. Give us a little sense of your Irish heritage, please.
Yes. So I was born in Ireland. My grandmother has property just outside of Dublin proper, kind of in the direction of Swords. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place with Connemara ponies. Absolutely idealistic childhood. And it was just such a pleasure to grow up in such a surrealistic setting compared to, well, moving stateside and moving into New York City, which was very, very different.
A big, big change across the Atlantic and into the concrete jungle that is the wonderful city of New York. And tell us a little bit about why you left Dublin for New York.
Yes, my father was offered a job in finance, and so it only made sense for our family to go ahead and make the big move.
Okay, a big change. How did you adjust? I mean, you're only, I was going to say little, that's your name, but you're only young then. Tell us a bit about the culture change. Do you remember much of it?
Oh, God, yes. I was utterly petrified. I was so shy and quiet, quite to many people's surprise. I was bullied quite mercilessly in school for having an accent at the time, not that I have much of one to speak of these days after being stateside for so long. But I remember it just being so strange to me, the way that people spoke to each other, the way that they interacted with each other. I'd say the biggest difference would be in terms of respect for family and teachers. Mm. I could not get over how the American kids would just snap back like that.
Was that a healthier thing, do you think, looking back now? Or do you think it was poor manners?
A little bit of both. In some cases, it would be instances of children standing up for themselves. But in others, it just came down to a sheer lack of respect.
Okay, well, look, let's get through the school years and out the other side, because you tried a number of careers that for different reasons, although in some occasions the same reason, you felt they weren't for you. You tried your hand at being an emergency medical technician, Alice. I think the one that I loved the most, given you've mentioned the Connemara ponies, is that you had a crack at the world, at the equine world, as a jockey.
I sure did and absolutely loved it. I'm extremely petite. I'm only 4'8". And so it just seemed like such a natural career choice. But unfortunately, it just wasn't a great fit for me long term. So off I went adventuring to try new things.
You mentioned a couple of times in the past that the likes of the emergency medical technician world and indeed the horse world for you on both occasions said they weren't a female friendly industry.
That is correct. In terms of the horse world, there is this frustration, I suppose, when it comes to female jockey, is that a lot of the male jockeys hold close to their heart. There's a hazing culture that exists where female jockeys are just relentlessly teased by the men, oftentimes even sabotaged either during or before the race. I remember one instance very clearly where somebody had ran off with my left stirrup literally 30 minutes before I was due at the gate. It was one of the most anxiety-inducing situations of my life.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, obviously that wouldn't have happened in Ireland, where it's all peace in love and gender when it comes to the horse world, from my understanding of it anyway. But let me ask you a little bit about your decision then to move into another world altogether. You said that you wanted to work close to people, that you like closeness, you like intimacy. So where did that bring you to then, career-wise?
Well, I tried my hand at being an EMT, an emergency medical tech, and unfortunately I'm a bit too squeamish for that profession long term. And that eventually led to me discovering sex education. And what I found is that I'm incredibly passionate about sharing the information with people, so this way they're able to better their lives. And it was through that channel that eventually led me to my career here at the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Carson City, Nevada.
So what is the Moonlight Bunny Ranch? Could you explain it to us geographically or architecturally before we go anywhere else?
Yes, the Moonlight Bunny Ranch is located in Carson City, Nevada, about 7 hours drive or 1 hour flight from Las Vegas, which most people know is kind of being the heart of the area. Well, the Bunny Ranch itself is a legal brothel. It's been in existence since 1972, in which it was legalized here within the state. Mm. Legal sex work is only operational in one out of the 50 states, and that so happens to be Nevada.
So you, how do you apply to get into the ranch, or how do you show credentials, Alice? How does that work?
It's actually an extensive process. Sure. People expect it to be quite quick, but really, it first starts with an online application in which you enter some information about yourself, your background, some general photos, followed by a phone interview in which they determine which location is going to be the best fit for your look, your personality, what you're wanting to bring to the table, if you're even a good fit for the industry at all. Mm. Again, we are very selective. Since it's only legal in one out of the 50 states, oftentimes we're on a wait list of applicants where women oftentimes are waiting weeks or months to get the opportunity. Fortunately, I had applied in November of 2015 and managed to get an opportunity to work there rather quickly. I was very surprised. I had the opportunity to travel out within 30 days of completing the online application process, and then began the in-person process. You have to clear your medical check. All the ladies are required by law to undergo an STD or STI test every single week. And once that information comes back, you then take that over to the local sheriff's office, where you then undergo an extensive FBI fingerprint background check before receiving your valid work card.
Now, you would have been 25 years old, Alice, educated, smart, articulate, and I suppose some people would be wondering, of all the businesses in all the world, why this one? So that's what I'm going to put to you now.
Intimacy. It is one of the things that has become increasingly rare in our society, and frankly speaking, I believe it's resulting in severe damage and trauma to our society. If we look at the divorce rate, it's skyrocketing. We look at the depression rates, again, skyrocketing. The birth rate, dropping. The younger generations are no longer engaging in casual sex like they once used to. And I think by and large, what all of that shows us is that we're no longer interfacing with each other in a genuine capacity. Social media, by and large, has created this falsified version of what we think is real and normal. And as a result, people are no longer reaching out and connecting skin to skin, face to face. I kind of wanted to be on the front lines fighting what is essentially a global epidemic of loneliness. We look at the suicide statistics in Japan, and it's just absolutely insane to me that we're seeing this trend worldwide, and yet we really aren't doing a whole lot about it.
And how about, you talked about wanting to be a sex educator, which is one thing. You can imagine somebody like that going, you're giving classes to couples or schools or parents and what have you. But it's quite another then to be a sex worker, as you say, at the front line. So how are you marrying the desire to evangelize about the need for more intimacy and skin on skin, as you say, versus the need to make a salary, a wage, by being an active sex worker at a legal brothel?
Oftentimes it looks like creating really unique personal experiences for my guests, based off of what their needs, wants, and desires are. So, for example, let's take a guest that's in their mid-30s, male, who is a virgin. Mm. They've never been on a date before. They've never so much as kissed a girl. I'm oftentimes going to start off by taking them out to a local restaurant and showing them what a polite date looks like, giving them conversation ideas, kind of cueing them through that experience. So this way they master not just the communication skills, but also feel more confident in themselves. After that, we'll travel back to the ranch or to their hotel room, in which we engage in other types of education. For example, anatomy. A lot of men have no idea how the female body functions, and no one has ever made it safe and accessible for them to ask questions and learn about that. Certainly in this country, sex education is flawed and lacking. 13 out of the 50 states require sex education to be scientifically accurate, which means in the rest of this country, we can pretty much teach that the stork delivers babies as if that were a scientific fact.
Sure.
And that's the majority.
Yep. No, you're talking to a country that is based for so many decades on a Catholic education system, which required a lot of guesswork for lots of us when we were younger.
Oh, yes. Just this afternoon on Twitter, I reached out and said, what were some of the sex lies that you were told growing up that you now know as an adult weren't true? And just the answers are quite astounding. Everything from, oh, you'll go blind if you engage in any sort of self-pleasure, to hand-holding will get you pregnant. Just the most wild things under the sun. And so naturally, we have a society, or really a global population now, that has no idea how to communicate in that genuine way. And I'm able to teach people one-on-one how to connect again, how to feel that genuine connection, really.
And if an individual or a couple come to see you and say, look, we're just frankly bored, where do you go with them, Alice?
You know, it looks like discovering why they're bored. It really all depends on the individual. There's no overlying advice. For example, is he always on top instead of her? Have you explored sex toy options? Have you thought about doing different types of sex acts that might bring different types of pleasure? Where are you at right now in your sex journey, and where do you two want to go? Sometimes that looks like engaging in a threesome in which I'm an active participant. Other times I'm more passive as a coach, where I'm showing him different maneuvers and positions that are going to suit them better. Other times it's couples that are aging, that are looking how to have intimacy in a way that doesn't kill their back and their hips, but still is really active and engaging.
Okay.
It's all
right. So it's quite a spectrum. It's a menu in some regards.
Oh, very much so. It's very much so customized, tailored to suit you, your needs, your desires, your boundaries and limitations. And that's the one thing, too, is that I never push people past their comfort levels. It's all about creating a safe place for people to explore on their own terms.
There's a lot of people listening, Alice, and will be kind of surprised to hear you speaking so frankly and in such an articulate way about the world that we're discussing, because the image of a brothel, particularly, I suppose, illegal, but let's say even legal, is something kind of seedy for people, a little untoward and very otherworldly.
Yes. Most of the time when I ask people to describe a brothel to me, close your eyes and tell me the first image that comes to mind. Ooh, it's dark and it's smoky. Well, let me stop you right there, because our front entryway is this beautifully lit marble showcase that has featurettes of some of the various celebrities that have come to visit. It's very much so different than what people expect it to be. They mentally picture something along the lines of a seedy strip club mixed with a basement dungeon, when in all reality, it's kind of more like a luxury day spa meets really beautiful hotel suites.
And then the criticism will alight on you about men, particularly, exploiting you for money, how for years, particularly, men and women have fought for the rights to avoid that very thing happening. And it's 2019 and we're moving again into another gear change of what's acceptable, what's not. Do you reflect on that, Alice?
Oh, constantly. It's one of those things that as a privileged legal sex worker, I have to confront the reality that internationally, there isn't a perfect system everywhere. In fact, many countries have systems that are exploitative and desperately need to be fixed. It's one of the reasons why I recently partnered with Prevent Human Trafficking, which is a nonprofit that raises funds for Thailand and helps to empower sex workers there to actually own the locations that they work at in a co-opt sense. Mm. Additionally, this nonprofit provides free education to the children of these female sex workers to prevent them from entering that system further, because at the end of the day, in Thailand especially, there still needs a lot of work, still needs a lot of improvement. And so I always look at things in the sense of what can I do to reduce harm while also empowering women at the same time. And what that looks like is supporting women in their missions and their wants and desires. If the women are of Thailand are saying, hey, we want to do this profession, but please help us own the location, well, that's the assistance they should be given. They shouldn't have their career stripped away simply because someone morally objects. It's their body, their choice, just like it's my body and my choice.
So for a session with you, as I say, with a couple or as an individual, can I ask you the cost of that?
So it is actually illegal to discuss specific rates outside of the brothel location. Mm. The closest generalities that I'm able to give are that experiences generally start in the four figures and kind of scale up from there, just depending on how long we are choosing to spend together and what kind of activities we want to engage in.
Okay. And your working week then, can you mention roughly how many hours a week you might work?
Oh, goodness. It completely depends, though what I can say is that I generally only see one guest each day, and I try to only have 5 or 6 appointments each week. This way, I'm able to really give somebody 100% all of my attention and focus. And outside of that, I'm also working on media content in terms of the Bunny Ranch podcast, my own YouTube series, and various other educational information to just help better people's lives and put that content out there to the world.
You mentioned your height earlier on. You said you're 4'8". Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Now, why are you smiling when I say that?
Well, I decided to go with the name Alice Little, partially as a pun. Alice being my actual middle name. Mm. When you have a super common first name, somebody goes by their middle name throughout school. And, well, Little just seemed far too fitting to not enjoy the pun of it all.
And is it a pro or a con for you?
I think it's a pro. I think tiny is mighty, and people oftentimes take a look at me and are disarmed by the fact that I am so petite, which allows them to be more open-minded as to the message that I'm bringing forward. Whereas if I was a 6-foot-tall, imposing blonde bearing down for sex workers' rights, I feel like there might be a little bit more of a pushback as opposed to the little pixie-like 4'8" redhead.
Okay. You've described yourself, and this is a word that came to our attention again last week when we were talking about Mark Ronson, the music producer, who also described himself as a sapiosexual. Could you remind us what that is?
Yes, it means that I am attracted to the human mind, intelligence first and foremost, and especially self-awareness even more so than intelligence. That, for me, is my primary mode of sexual engagement, far more so than a specific gender or body type or skin color. I really don't discriminate based off of those characteristics. They're just not of any value or importance to me. The reality is that looks fade. We all change as we grow over time. And to say that somebody is less attractive or less valued as a human being because they've now moved from their 20s and 30s to their maybe 50s or 60s, it's ridiculous. It's really, I don't know. I just feel like it's so surface level that I couldn't imagine myself thinking in that term.
What would you say, Alice, to Irish people listening this morning who haven't had sex for a long time, who are having intimacy issues in their own relationships? What would you advise them? Would you counsel them?
Absolutely. And I really do believe it starts with a journey of self-love, reconnecting with your intimate self. Like, when's the last time you simply laid back and ran your hands up and down your arms or your shoulders and made notes of where is more sensitive, where are your erogenous zones? When's the last time you just treated yourself to an afternoon of things that bring you joy and happiness? And that's really a great launching pad for people who are looking to kind of begin this journey on their own. Start with the self before you start looking at your relationships with others. When you're content and happy in your own skin and you feel like a complete and whole person rather than one of a half, you really have the ability to enter relationships with a genuine capacity for giving.
You have the personality, it strikes me as being very sociable. Almost, I can hear your Irishness in that. Do you get home? I mean, obviously you were born here, but do you get home?
I do. I come back and forth probably once every other year. We do a gigantic, massive family reunion. As you mentioned earlier, Roman Irish Catholic is still very much so in existence throughout Ireland, and a good portion of my family is religious, and as such, they don't just have three or four children, they have like 7 to 10. So I have a lot of cousins.
And how does that go down in terms of your... So Alice, how's life at the office, you know?
It is very interesting, to say the least. When my family learned of my career and I kind of sat everyone down and said, okay, I'm coming out of the, let's call it the arm war, since it's not really a closet here. It's like, hi, this is what I do now. And there was a very mixed reaction in terms of, oh my God, are you safe? Are you trafficked? Are you happy? Do you really want to be doing this? And it was just this opportunity for education, which ended up being really beautiful. And it kind of launched this wonderful discussion within my family in terms of how do we handle sexuality as a species? Where do we fail the next generation? What can we be doing better? And I just thought it was so interesting to see everyone from my 21-year-old med student cousin to my aunt and uncle, which have been very, very much so in a committed relationship, having these conversations at the dinner table was really just amazing.
That's a conversation with a twist, Alison, no doubt about that. It's been lovely to talk to you, and thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It has been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
If anybody has questions, I genuinely am an open book. I invite everyone and everyone to email me, contact me, reach out, whether it be questions, concerns, comments. I want to be a genuine resource for this very exotic and unique space that exists in Nevada.
Sounds good to me, Alice. Thank you so much for your time. All the best. I wish you the very best in everything you do.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. Alice Little joining us from Nevada this morning. The text number 51551.